Welcome to Publishing Cousins, where family meets the fascinating world of books. I'm Melissa Lesher, the author.
And I'm Nikki Becker, the illustrator.
We are partners in publishing.
Ever wonder what really happens behind the scenes in publishing? Well, you're in the right place. Every episode, we'll be pulling back the curtain on this wild and wonderful industry, sharing our own creative adventures, and dishing out hard-earned wisdom about writing and illustrating for publication.
From manuscript mayhem to deadline drama, from sketch submissions to final flourishes, we're bringing you the real deal, served with the hefty side of cousin banter and plenty of laughs. Whether you're dreaming of seeing your own work in print or you're just a book lover curious about how the magic happens, we've got something special for you.
So grab your favorite beverage, settle into your comfy chair, and join us for an insider's journey through the world of publishing. We're the Publishing Cousins, and we can't wait to share our stories with you. Welcome back to another episode of the Publishing Cousins. Today, Melissa and I are talking about what we learned during our first published projects. Hi, Melissa.
Hey, how's it going, Nikki?
It's going good. Going good.
And what are you drinking today, or what's your mug for the day? I should have known yours was going to be Snoopy.
I need space. Stay out of my space. You know, I'm in the studio today.
I don't have anything fancy. I just have a little Starbucks water mug today, or cup, whatever you want to call it. I didn't bring my mug today. Forgot it.
So it's just water in the mug? Or in the Starbucks cup today?
Yeah, I had my tea earlier. I'm a big tea girl. I'll do coffee, but tea's it for me.
I wish I could get it into tea, and I've tried, but so I'm gonna fib and say that I'm drinking cherry coke out of my little, but trying to kick the pop habit or the soda habit depending on where you are. You know, if it's in a smaller glass, you drink less, right?
There you go. I like that. Or you just fill it up more often.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, I am super excited about talking about our first projects today.
Yeah, me too. It's kind of a show and tell, so if you have the video side, you'll get to see some things.
Yes, I think we both brought some things to show, mm-hmm. Hopefully. Well, you can see them on the video, but... Okay, I'm going to kick us off with talking about the writing side.
Yeah.
Because...
It's the first step, right?
It is the first step, right? An illustrator isn't going to illustrate until you give them your words so they can put pictures to your words. So now I don't do children's books, but I do novels, but I understand that process a little bit. So I'm just going to share a little, my very first officially published book was this book here, and it's no longer in print, by the way. It's Love's Fairy Tale. And don't you love the cover? I love the cover.
I do.
I love that castle.
That the color palette, you know, I've told you this before, but that color palette is you. 100% you. I mean, that is your color palette right there.
It
your
is.
Lifelong color palette.
Well, thanks. That tends to be the colors I, you know, drift to. So this book is a huge flop. And it is the reason why I started Literary Escape to begin with. And it's why I started the my writers group and all of this good stuff. Because basically I wanted to share all the things I learned and how I fell flat on my face so that other people starting out don't fall flat on their face. I love to share what I learned. So I was, I don't know, like maybe still in my 20s when this came out. I can't even remember when it came out. There's a couple of things that I was writing in the young adult genre, and I discovered that's not my genre. Actually, I don't enjoy reading it as much. I enjoy it, you know, reading to my class, but mm-hmm. for me personally, it wasn't, that's not my go-to genre. And I like to go explore things on a little more adult, deeper level than what you can do with it with kiddos. And so,
I'm going to stop you right there. Young adult, are you talking ages?
So this was targeting like 12 to 18 year olds.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not quite that juvenile fiction range. You're a little older. Mm-hmm. So YA. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I had the naive, you're going to laugh at this, Nikki. You're so going to laugh. I had this naive view of you get your book published and it will sell thousands of copies miraculously and it'll just be a hit and it'll be awesome, right? Like, I don't have to put any work into it because the company that's publishing for me is going to market it, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
All right. So here's the other thing. I sold very few copies. It wasn't on Amazon very long either before they took it off. Because you have to sell so many within the first like 90 days before they drop really? You. I don't know if it's still that way, but that's how it was. I also did not give this manuscript the time it deserved. The quality in it. If I ever get back into that genre, I will completely rewrite this. I was trying to rush it out to get it published before my grandfather passed away from cancer.
Right.
I didn't make it in the end, but he did get to read my first draft. Well, my grandma sat and read it to him because he was just so overjoyed that someone else in the family was writing, because his mother wrote articles for new magazines.
Yeah.
And grandpa got some of his letters published in a book, which I have that book now.
Really?
Yes. So he was just like, he was crying when I told him I'm gonna have my book published because somebody picked me up and wanted to publish it. And so I rushed it, and I didn't go through a critique group. I didn't do any editing outside of what that company offered. And when I go back and read it, it is terrible writing. In my opinion, it's terrible. I'm just going to tell you, it's awful. Don't ever read. Well, you can't get it, and I will never reprint it in this form ever because it's embarrassing to me. So after that disaster, I went and I took a ton of classes, online courses. I think I mentioned this in another episode, but I'll link it in again. So Thomas Umstead Jr. has Author Media. Amazing courses, and I got his I don't know, I'll find the name and I'll tell you the name of it, but his one course, it covers everything, and he also has a 5-year plan that I signed up for too. Ooh. So it takes you through learning the craft of writing and then marketing, and it's just got a ton of Obscure No More, that's the name of it.
He actually calls that a 5-year plan.
Yes.
That's genius, because this is not an industry. It's not just your genre, but publishing in general is not an industry where, unless it is just pure luck with a little bit of skill, you've got to expect things to take time. You know, when I left art school, I'm just going to throw this in there because I don't want anybody to hear 5-year plan and be like, what? 5 years? No, if you want to do well publishing, whether it's, even if it's self-publishing, because like you said, you self-publish that, and people know books, people know, even shopping on Amazon, they know what they're looking for. So yeah, you need to expect it to take time. And on the illustration side, I'm just to touch on this real quick. Leaving art school, and I don't think it matters if you went to art school or if you're just have that natural born talent that you hone on your own. You need to give it 5 to 7 years to get your feet wet and to get in the door. If you're going a very natural way. So that makes me ecstatic to know someone's out there, even in writing versus the illustration side, saying, hey, this is a 5-year plan. Be realistic about this. So that's mm-hmm. great. I love that.
Yes, it is a wonderful plan. Again, I'll link to it for our listeners, because if you're just starting out, he has all these great resources, all these craft books. But anyway, so it's been over 5 years and I'm just now putting out my next book. I stopped I learned from those failures, and I took my time studying and connecting with other authors. You talked about connecting with people. As you're working on your craft, that's when you get to connect with these authors that have already gone before you and kind of let them mentor you and get you prepared so that when you do get ready to launch your book, if you're indie publishing, well, even if you're traditionally publishing, having those connections in the industry where they can share your work out with their readers. Just a side note, if someone you've connected to says, I'm not going to share your book with my readers, it's like, don't get upset. It's because your book doesn't align to what their readers enjoy, most likely, is what I've come up against, where they said, you know, yours isn't quite what my readers like, so I don't want to suggest a book to them that I know they're not going to like. So
people who love to read, there are those that read anything and everything they can get their hands on, and they're a sponge for the written word. But most of us have a genre that just makes us want to curl up in a comfy chair with a blanket and just get lost in that book. And someone who, you know, it's like picking up nonfiction. I have a friend that loves her self-help books. God bless you if you can do that, but I cannot pick up a self-help book and read it. I can listen into it on audiobook and be just fine, but I cannot sit there and read it. It just never holds my attention. So you got to know what you love to read. And and like you said, that if you've got an author friend who does write that self-help, no, they're not going to want to plug, you know, your Westerns or your, you know, whatever genre, your science fictions or whatever you're writing about. So that's a good tip. I like hearing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just because sometimes we let our feelings get hurt when they really shouldn't. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, no big deal. It doesn't match your readers, and that's fine. The other thing you have to think about is they've spent years gathering their reader flock, I guess you could say, and they want to be good shepherds of their readers, right? Like,
that's a wonderful way to put that.
It is. Yeah. I just feel like, you know, those readers trust that author.
Yeah.
And they don't want to break that trust by throwing this oddball, you know, book at them and saying, hey, you know, you should read this. And then they're like, ew. You know what I mean? That's just not taking care of their flock. So,
no, yeah, that's a great way to put that.
Yeah. So I would say,
a caring way to put that.
Do what?
That's a very kind and caring way to put that. I love it.
Well, the what is always through my head, and this comes from everyone I've met, and I don't know if it's because I work in the Christian genre, I'm not sure, but it is, you are there to serve your reader, and if you serve them well, they'll keep coming back.
Yeah.
They'll stick with you. And so every time I'm writing or I'm doing things, I'm thinking about, what does my reader want, right? How can I serve them? So just keep that in mind. I don't know. That's kind of what I go off of. But I will say, from my experience, you need to get plugged into a writer's group, definitely a critique group. And this is me personally. You need to run your book through at least 3 edits. And I'm talking, you start with a developmental edit, and then you move into the copy edits, the line edits, and then you do the proofread. And it is worth paying 3 separate people to do it, because then you've got 3 sets of eyes on your work. Oh, yeah. Because we all know how the brain will just kind of autofill, and you'll miss things here and there. But you up your chances of those things being caught if you do that. So definitely do that. But before you even, while you're in that, be a student of the process of writing, you know, learn, sign up for those online courses and learn from the experts.
That's very true. Well, and I think you need to come to a point too where it's really not different than anything we try in life. We have to be willing to say that after the first time or two, we're not going to be perfect. I don't know that there's a such thing as perfection in publishing. I don't know that there is truly anywhere. And for somebody who's kind of a perfectionist on things, I pick up the last book I illustrated. I'm like, ugh, look at that. That just this little spot and this little illustration that no one else in the world will ever notice. And it's like, oh, why did I leave that there? Or there's a little blemish, or that color's not quite right. I should have went some, you know, to, I should have used a different tone of green, or, you know, whatever it is. It's, you're going to be ever evolving. And if you're open to that, I think it shows in your work. Each time
most, you create. Yeah. Most authors don't publish their first book. I wrote two novels in the historical Christian romance genre.
Really?
Before I published, and I took one of them, but I rewrote it so much they're not even the same. You know what I'm saying? Like, my characters are the same, but the story itself is so different that if I went back to my old one and changed the character names, I could have a whole nother book. It's just they're that different. But it's because as I was, you know, you write, you need to be writing, but I was taking those courses and going, oh, let me try this little bit of craft in there. Oh, let me take this technique with dialogue and throw it in, or action beats and throw it in. Like, it was a total play, you know, you're playing with it until I finally got my one that's out now. So.
Ooh, well, that's fascinating, because I don't write, not a lick of writing here.
And I want to hear about your project, but at the end, I would love to talk about the need for marketing. And I think you're going to touch on that too, because you had an issue with being able to sell books as well, correct?
Oh, well, yeah. And we'll go into that, I guess.
Okay. But first, let's hear about Nikki's first project.
So, you know, what Melissa touched on, you know, that whole 5-year plan. When I left art school, it was said to us many times during my 4.5 years in university that you've got to give yourself time to evolve. Yes, you're going to learn a lot, but what you do today may not be what you're going to end up doing. And so they were right in my personal case. I graduated in 2001, and I got my first assignment in 2007, and it didn't publish until 2009. So, my first publication was actually totally different than most people. That was the start of like Blogger. And blogging and finding network. And my thing is, I was working in a library. I was around the books to stay motivated. I was drawing every day. I was trying to find that style in my work. I wasn't promoting myself. I wasn't strongly going after work. And my first book is nothing like where I am today. And it was nothing like where I was in art school either. Why this book happened, I don't know. It was actually a contest that I entered. So you enter a contest, and if you get chosen, there were so many illustrators chosen to be matched up with so many authors. And we got a snippet, like a couple paragraphs of their manuscript. And we were told to illustrate one page based on this snippet that they gave you of the manuscript. So I did a quick drawing and I submitted it. And then, you know, some time went by, and then it was told that they were going to let everybody know that, you know, you got matched. And so basically, I think it went down to like 7 books. And then you got chosen, like those 7 people or those 14 people got chosen. And then it went up on a website, and that website then wanted people to come and vote on their favorite. So you were sending people, you were trying to get as many people as you knew to go vote for your picture and that snippet of the story, because you wanted that book. Only one book was going to go on to be published. So, me and the author, Jillian Coley, won out of the 7 that was up. And so that went on to be, I was asked to do a book dummy first. So I still have the book dummy that I did of What's Wrong with Mud. And I look back at this now, and like you said, it's horrid. Oh, it's terrible. It's awful. So this is back. I think I drew this with pen and ink, and then I scanned it in, and then I uploaded it into Photoshop, and I put blocked color in the background. And I mean, it's got awful, but it's kind of fun to see, you know, a little book, you know. So I did all the illustrations. And so I had at the time, like, I loved, and this still hangs in my office today. I still love, you know, as bad as it is, like, and I'm thinking, this was after 4.5 years of art school. It's awful. You know, I was so proud of this at the time. So anyway, they said, well, how are you going to, you know, what's your medium that you're going to choose? Well, for whatever reason at the time, I was playing around with cut paper. There was some other illustrators out there doing it, and it was just a very fun, I was making cards and things at the time. So it was like, I was just having a lot of fun building layers and having some shadow in there. So I went on to do this book and cut paper, and I wanted outline. So not only did I have a layer of paper, I had two layers of paper for every character, because every character had a background that was an outline. So the book went on to be produced. It took me 6 months to a year to make it, I think.
Wow.
Stupid long time for that. But, you know, I was working a full-time job, da-da-da-da-da. So long story short, it went on. It's beautifully printed. I mean, the book turned out beautiful as terms of printing, the paper and the cover. It's all beautiful. But the cut paper, why did I ever, ever in the world think that that was a good idea? But so it went on. I'm trying to find the page. So I really, really loved the big splash in the mud. But that went on, and I learned that was just the absolute wrong medium for me. That was just dumb to have done what I did. But I did it. It's over. And it's still a cute book as my first book, I suppose.
It's kind of like me discovering young adult is not my genre. Sometimes you try it and you go, ugh.
And it was a lot of fun. And I think that's why I wanted to do it, because it was fun to build with your hands. It was fun to take a piece of colored paper and turn it into something different. And it was, I love having that. Like, I have other things, you know, if you use traditional medium, it's just fun sometimes to play with that. But it's not what I should have done at the time. So anyway, you know, you live and learn. It still got printed, and it was a wonderful learning experience. And just like with you, you said that it was awful for you, but you had to do that book. And what you got out of it in the end was worth the journey that mm-hmm. you went through, for that to push you to join the writing groups, to invest in your craft, to get better, to do those things. That, I think that's the big takeaway on your first project, is it should be that push that you need to go, oh, okay, that was crap, but I want to do better. How do mm-hmm. I do better? This is my next step. And so I think that it's great to have that first piece. Now, you know, there's people, and I know plenty of illustrators, their first published work was miraculous, and good for them.
You're still learning though, right? Like, they're still learning the process.
You're still learning. Mine was not, and that's just my story. So, but it's worth it to, it's worth it to do it. Your first piece, I don't know, even those people that have, you know, a bestseller or whatever, from their first published work, I bet they still look on it after so many published works farther down the line. They still look on it with, you know, they could probably pick it apart and say, oh, that was awful, or that's not my favorite. I like book number three better than book number one, or whatever mm-hmm. it is.
And it doesn't matter how many like great reviews or positive feedback, you always go back and look. Book one is launching as we record this. By the time this episode airs, though, book two should be out. So I'm in book two, and I already like book two better because I think it's better written than book one, you know? And so then I think, should I go back and rewrite book one? I'm like, no, you have to drop it, and you just keep getting better as you go.
You have to move on, and you have to appreciate the last one for what it is and what it was in the moment that you were creating it. And don't be upset, you know, 2 months down the road when you create something different going, oh, if I only would have done that because I learned that 2 weeks ago. And if I only would have done that in that book, it would have been so much better. No, get the stinking thinking, get the stinking thinking out of your head and just keep taking the next right step forward and be proud of yourself that you acknowledge that the change in you or the change in something that you learned could have affected the past a little different. Because I think that that's our sign that, hey, you evolved a little bit, is when we can critique ourselves on our past stuff. I was going to dive into the marketing.
Go for it.
With What's Wrong with Mud, I was part of the winning of the competition was I got 500 copies of that book. And 500 copies didn't sound like very many when you're told, hey, you're going to get 500 copies. And then a semi truck rolls up to your house with freaking skids of boxes that are too heavy for even an appliance dolly to get into the house. And you're going, what just happened? A, where am I going to put these things until I can unload them? And B, that's a lot more books than I thought. Like, so, and then okay, what do you want to do with those 500 books? Okay, everybody in the family, you want to buy one? Do you want to give it to them for free? You know, whatever you choose to do, you have nieces and nephews or, you know, young kids in the family that you give a book to, you save them back for Christmas gifts or birthday presents or whatever it is. And then you still have 475 books left. You know what I mean? So
oh, yeah.
Me, I had What's Wrong with Mud. We have a local festival every year called the Pork Festival. And so I bought, you know, I rented booth space. I thought, oh, I'm going to have this really pretty table and we're going to do author, you know, illustrator signings. And I'm going to sell 50 to 100 books. I sold 2 over a course of 3 days. So it didn't even cover booth space, let alone, you know, what you spend to make it pretty and all the things. And so then, who'd have thought marketing wise that you go to a book festival that's all about pigs and you don't sell a pig book, but you didn't. And so then that was still before Facebook was around, but I think I actually joined Facebook the same year that the book came out. So I didn't have a community there yet. It was just family who already knew about it anyway. Instagram wasn't a thing yet, so you weren't promoting there, and you certainly didn't have a community there to promote. The whole sharing and all of that, I don't think was quite around yet, or it wasn't big. So how do you market a book? And yeah, I had friends and I had critique groups and I had Blogger, but marketing was tough then. I mean, I'll be honest, it's a lot easier now with all of the social media platforms, but that was all real new and not everybody was into that side of it yet. So I got stuck. I don't know. I did a couple like craft typey shows, sold a few books. I did a couple of school visits. I donated books to a couple libraries. And I still had a lot of books left. So I think I ended up donating a mass majority of those books to a foundation that I don't even know if it's still around, trying to give back in a positive way and have those books at least have a little light in the world. That I look back going, that's what it was meant to be at the time. And I'm okay with that. I was fully aware, even as a teenager, that doing art as a career was going to have ebbs and flows financially. it was going, and it's going to be a lot of work. And you're never, no, I'm not going to say that. It's not impossible. But I wasn't under the impression at any point in my life or my career that I was going to be a multi-billionaire doing illustration. I mean, there are those out there, I'm sure, that do that, and, you know, more power to you. But that is not, that's not my life. And it's, I don't think I want that for my illustration. I think that that's what it is. We have an audience, particular audience that we want to serve, like you said. And I just want my illustrations to go out into the world and give light in some fashion. If I'm doing that and I get to do it every day, if I get to help an author's book come to light, if I get to make a child smile, laugh, cry, whatever, just get lost in a little part of their day and some happiness with a book, that is my purpose for what I'm doing.
Yeah. I would say most authors feel the same way. They hope that their books bring hope to the world or light to the person who's reading it. I will say that investing in training and marketing is worth every dollar you put towards it, mm-hmm. because I don't want to say that you're not born with those skills. I think there's some people that are just natural salesmen and can get it done. But most of us, especially authors and illustrators, I don't know. I know from the author's perspective, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Nikki, but we tend to be more introverts. And so selling ourselves and our products is not something we're comfortable with at all, you know? And so getting some training on that, the most expensive training I've done so far was for marketing training, and it was worth every dollar. And I did it with Becky Kapitsky at the Inspired Business Co. I'll put a link to her stuff in there, but she did a 3-month mentorship with me. And so there were certain assignments I had to do. She helped me build sales pages and a training video. That's not the right term. I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically a funnel. She helped me build my funnel that says, hey, watch this video and learn about what I have to offer. And then generally it turns into sales. And then she helped me with email marketing and social media marketing. I go back to those lessons constantly to say, it needs to happen in this order. I need to be working on this. Totally worth every penny I spent on it.
It is. And I've learned recently that there's business coaches out in the world for the different businesses, even for writers and illustrators and creatives of all kinds, to help you with that. But like you said, it's an expense. It's a big expense. What you gain from it, I think, it will come back tenfold. Marketing changes all the time. In illustration, what's popular right now? The little animal with the nose, the capybara. Is that what I'm thinking of? Okay. Mm-hmm. So that is a huge trend right now that's relatively new and climbing. You know, you go through your trends of unicorns, mermaids, sloths. I mean, how many years ago can you remember walking into a store? And if you have kids, especially girls, sloths are on everything. And it's even on adult packaging. You can walk into cosmetics and see a, you know, makeup bag with a sloth pattern on it. You know, those are all trends that come and go and ebb and flow. And working with children, it does come into play, whether you're writing or illustrating. So marketing ourselves and what we're creating, those trends change too. And I think it's great that you go back to what you were taught. But in 5 years, what you were taught might need to be tweaked a little bit because the marketing platforms have changed.
Right. And so I think you need to get that foundation. Mm-hmm. And then I tend to listen to a lot of podcasts on marketing to keep up with the trends, but I at least have that foundation. I understand the terminology now. I understand the basics enough that when those trend changes happen, I can keep up with them. One of the podcasts I've been loving is Writing Off Social. They're all about how to grow your readership and promote your books without using social media. However, the guests that they have on sometimes still dabble in social media. So you still pick up tips and tricks within that realm. So if you're used to it, I did it because honestly, social media overwhelms me. Yes, I can get in and I can play with it, but in general, it just bogs me down, like to the point I hate getting on and scheduling my posts. Absolutely hate it. It's like the easiest thing to do, right? Is to get on and schedule like 5 posts that need to go out. And I put it off because I just don't even want to do it.
I'm right there with you. And here's why. It's just like doing the dishes. Okay. It's a chore that we really need to do to have a well-rounded business or well-rounded home, right? You need to do the dishes so you have the next meal to eat on plate. But you would rather spend that time writing the next book. I would rather spend my time illustrating, whether it's a portfolio piece or the next book I'm working on or whatever it is. You go, oh, this is one of those tedious tasks that, do I have to? And you're sitting here going, okay, I need to dedicate time block. We were talking about this the other day.
Yes.
Time blocking, dedicate 10 minutes to scheduling my post for the week. I will say that I also struggle with that. And I've got a really good friend who owns her own marketing firm. And she has told me, you need to be doing your social media. Like, she's kicking my butt. You haven't posted today. And it's like, okay, I get it. So it's like, okay, how can I not post every day, but still be consistent? And she said, start with 2 days a week, start with 3 days a week, whatever. Get you a social media content planner and map your, stuff out a couple weeks in advance, or, then you're going to get good at that. And then hopefully it's going to evolve to where you can sit down and do a month or 2 months or 3 months and, an hour or something like that. But, once she swears to me that once you get in the habit of doing it and you make it a habit, then it will become even easier and it won't even take you the 10 minutes that you've time blocked for it. So
let me know how that works out for you, because I'm just not that committed to social media. I'm far more committed to my emails and my newsletters.
Okay. Can I give you a little tip? And I haven't done it myself. Here's a tip, people. Interns. I'm serious. Like, when I was still living in the city and not out in the middle of cows and corn, I had an intern 1 year, and she helped me catalog thousands of images that I was working on in an educational product at the time. And I thought, you know what? An intern for social media would be fantastic. So if you live near a high school or a college campus that, you might be able to get some marketing students to intern for you for free, interns might be the way to go there. Let's think about that.
It's a good suggestion for sure. And then when eventually, if you can, you can afford to have a VA. So.
Oh, right. Wouldn't that be? I know a couple of people who do that too. And I've almost thought, like, in the downtime, maybe I should do that as like a part-time job. And then I'm like, no, because then I'd be doing it for them and I'd want to be stopping and doing it for me. And if I could do it for them, I could do it for me. And all of that.
I think most people can walk away learning, understanding what we've learned, and hopefully then can avoid those potholes themselves. And again, we'll put the links to all the places we talked about or that we referenced as sources in the notes for this episode as well. So I say stick with it, keep writing. Nikki, what do you got?
Absolutely. You keep drawing. Draw every day. You must draw every day if you're an illustrator. And just pat yourself on the back for continuing on. Whether it's listening to a podcast today to get your inspiration, or if you scrolled through social media today to look at other people's art or read authors' blogs or social media, Pat yourself on the back for doing a little bit every day. And if you're not doing a little bit every day, try to time block it and add it to your schedule.
Yes. And we're going to dig into more of that time blocking in a later episode. But I think that's it for today. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Publishing Cousins. If you enjoyed our creative conversation today, be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcast. We'd also love it if you could rate, review, and share the show. It helps other book lovers find us. You can learn more about Nikki's portfolio and Melissa's novels at publishingcousins.com. And if you have questions about writing, illustrating, or publishing that you'd like us to cover in future episodes, send them our way at literaryscape@literaryscape.com. Until next time, keep creating, and remember, in publishing, as in family, there's always room for more stories.